Hey, everybody. On this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, I was out in the first hour. I was actually on Fox News Outnumbered, co-hosting for the full hour. So producer Andrew chipped in rather brilliantly. But I want to start with our segment on why is the media covering Joe Biden's Catholicism so positively? Also, who actually has financially benefited from the lockdowns? And then followed by those two important topics, you can hear producer Andrew's entire hour as he anchors The Charlie Kirk Show. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. I know a lot of you had audio issues with our episode yesterday with Pastor Jack Hibbs. It should be all fixed, so go back and listen to that episode in its entirety. Email us your questions, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Action-packed episode, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I'm very excited to talk to you all about a new book that is coming out this month from my dear friend, Turning Point Endowment Board member, smart man, best-selling author Jim Holden. Selling in an Anxious World is Jim's fifth book on selling strategies and best practices. This time, Jim brings together research, science, and observation to identify the leading cause of declining business-to-business sales, otherwise known as corporate culture. I had the great honor of actually contributing to this book. When Jim approached me, I said, Jim, anything for you. Jim has been a loyal friend of mine and a good American. Through my work with Turning Point, I'm in a unique position to observe academic culture within our colleges and relate it to the corporate world, particularly its impact on company culture. In today's world, good company culture requires vigilant protection, which is why this book is so timely and a must-read for business people, sellers, patriots, and Christians. Selling in an Anxious World combines research from extensive deal reviews, examples from Jim's personal life, and Bible references to shine a light on culture, presenting an unconventional guide to solving an unconventional problem. You'll get quick access to whatever topics are important to you through chapter summaries and reference guides. Jim Holden's book is not like any other business book. Go to sellingcharlie.com, that's sellingcharlie.com, and use the special code Charlie to get a discount. And please send me your thoughts on the book and my chapter at freedom@charliekirk.com. Again, that's Selling an Anxious World by my friend Jim Holden. Check it out. A must read from everyone. When you read it, email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. I was reading an article this weekend, and Joe Biden went to Mass. I don't know if you saw that or not.
He did, and frequented a bagel shop there in Georgetown,
with Hunter Biden. And there's a lot that really irritated me about this story. We were all kind of texting it around. First of all, they said that Joe Biden is one of the most religiously reverent presidents in recent history, kind of glossing over George W. Bush and Reagan, who I believe went to church, and Carter with great regularity. Anyway, let's just take that at face value. Later in the article, it said, you know, Trump was best known for his church attendance by only going in front of St. John's Church, where a bunch of protesters were gassed the day before. I said, wait a second. No, it's well known because BLM incorporated rioters tried to burn it down. But what really bothered me, what I want to get to, which is really an important thing, I could do an entire podcast on this topic, is do you notice how affectionately and how positively the media frames Joe Biden's Catholicism versus Amy Coney Barrett's Catholicism?
It was evil. Just a few weeks ago, you were called a religious zealot if you were anything like Amy Coney Barrett, literally 6 weeks ago. And now here we are.
And so Raphael Warnock, for being an evangelical, gets treated very nicely. And yet other evangelicals like Ted Cruz get treated like people that are in the backwoods. And what it really goes to show, though, is that the left is willing to use any pre-existing core cultural institution to achieve their goals. They do not – the left does not believe in the core teachings of Catholicism or of evangelical Christianity at all. I'm not going to get into the whole part of how Joe Biden could possibly be a Eucharist-taking Catholic pro-choice advocate. I don't – that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. In fact, priests have said if he shows up to our church, I'm going to deny him the sacrament. Good, because that is exactly what should happen. Anyway, that's not me saying it. I'm just saying that's probably a good idea. The thing that's really interesting, though, is that the left's war on religion, which we know exists, shows that it's a little bit more nuanced than that. They do not want to get rid of the church. They want to get rid of the churches they don't like. They want to get rid of the disagreeable churches. They want to get rid of the pastors that push against their power. They know that people are going to need a connection to a higher being. They know that people are going to need a relationship with their creator. Where the left has become more disciplined, though, is instead of just becoming pathologically anti-religious, and that still exists, they have decided to co-opt the appearance of being religious to try and achieve a social justice goal. What are your thoughts, Andrew?
So, yeah, I mean, to your point, Raphael Warnock was, I think, the standout example that mirrors the Joe Biden example is that, oh, now we celebrate faith. So long as it's an African-American minister in Georgia that's running up against a conservative who's also pro-choice. Mm-hmm. And I find it really, really rich because the left, as you remember, sort of booed God at the DNC. What was that, in 2016? Mm-hmm. Where they booed it on their platform. And then you see this throughout sort of the whole world, right? Argentina just recently approved, they legalized abortion, and you had people, hundreds of thousands of them, dancing in the streets in the middle of a pandemic, and nobody cared. Nobody said anything about super spreader events or anything. I mean, it was really sick stuff. And this is what the left does, is they pick and choose, they cherry pick. There's zero consistency. There's zero consistency. And I think that's the thing that frustrates traditional America the most, is that we just you know they use what they use when they want to use it.
That's right. And so for them, it doesn't – the teachings of the Catholic Church might actually probably alarm a lot of Joe Biden's very, very liberal supporters. Like, do you guys do – hey, Joe Biden, you know what the church says about transgender issues, right? You do know what the church says about men being men and women are women. You do know what the church says about when life begins. You do know what the church says about marriage. You do know what the church says about – all of these things that he seems to be very happy interfacing with on the liberal base. And the New York Times wrote an article, and I'm paraphrasing, said, Joe Biden is going to embrace the more liberal sides of Catholicism, racial justice, poverty elimination, and a little bit less on the social issues. Like, okay, I got it. So he's for expanding the God of government, but for destroying the way God made us. Totally understand that. That makes a lot of sense, New York Times. So for you, that's a useful Catholicism. But here's the one thing that Joe Biden does not understand in the last couple seconds that we have on radio. They will attack him for his Catholicism eventually. So keep going to Mass, Joe. Keep contradicting the teachings of the church. But eventually, the liberals will come for you too. Legacy Box is an effortless way to digitally preserve your home movies and photos so you never have to wonder where they are or whether they're safe. This is very important. What are your favorite holiday traditions? Now that the holidays are over, two big questions arise. How long should your tree stay up, and how can I stay connected with family between now and the next holiday? Did you know that videotape recordings weren't made to stand the test of time, unlike our Constitution? They start diminishing after 10 or 15 years. So the sooner you digitally preserve them, the better off you will be. Legacy Box makes reconnecting with your past as easy as pressing play. With Legacy Box, you can have all of that footage organized and preserved quickly and easily. The service is shockingly simple. With their tracking system, you can follow every step of the process so you always know your original items are secure. Over the past 10 years, Legacy Box has helped more than 1 million families restore and protect irreplaceable products. Use the product that we use to preserve our past. Go to legacybox.com/Charlie. That's legacybox.com/Charlie to take advantage of this limited time offer and get 50% off. That's right. Even if you wanted to do this yourself, it would cost hundreds of dollars. Here's the way Legacy Box works. You put it in a box, you send it to them, and it's preserved forever. Home movies, pictures, memories. Have Legacy Box do the heavy lifting for you and that you could trust them. This exclusive offer won't last long, so order their kit now and send it in whenever you're ready. Go to legacybox.com/Charlie and save 50% off while supplies last. So let's get right back into the news cycle. Isabel, what is just breaking right here?
Breaking right before our eyes right now. We are expected to see Senator Patrick Leahy, who's a Democrat from Vermont and the president pro tempore of the Senate, going to preside over President Trump's impeachment trial starting on February 8th instead of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts. They're saying that senators preside when the person facing trial isn't the current president of the United mm-hmm. States. I think we have to look a little bit more into that, but certainly begs the question on whether or not this follows a constitutional procedure.
Well, there's never been an impeachment when the individual is not the president of the United States. And so since Chief Justice John Roberts won't be showing up. Is it even an impeachment at all, or is it just kind of a vote of no confidence censure exercise in the United States Senate? And we've gone through in great detail, and I encourage you guys to go to our YouTube channel and listen to our video. This says illegal impeachment, where we go through this in more ways than one, where we talk about how this impeachment is not rooted in a constitutional nature, where it says it has to be a civil officer, someone who currently has power in the United States, a executive branch or in the United States government, not just somebody that used to serve in office that you do not like. And so this is a very interesting story here, because if we are looking at why the Democrats are exactly – why are they doing this? I think they actually want to look and create a constitutional crisis. You know, I was watching some CNN this morning just briefly. They're still talking about Trump. They're talking about how Trump wanted to get rid of the attorney general. They're talking about how Trump might want to start a third party. We predicted all of this, by the way. Instead of covering Joe Biden signing his name on a bunch of stuff that will allow men, you know, who think they are women, serve in women's sports, they are instead just covering the former president. You know, they're going to try to speak it into an existence. And just like how we would speak into existence the creation of a third party on the Democrat side.
Absolutely. And I think that's precisely why impeachment is so important now, even after President Trump has left Washington, D.C. He's no longer impacting politics day to day. This is about so much bigger than one individual who's a former civil officer. This is about squashing the idea of the Make America Great Again movement altogether by preventing this individual from running for office again, which, by the way, should be up to the American voter, not who's currently sitting in Congress, and just making sure that the American people know conservative ideas are no longer tolerated in 2021.
So Senator Rand Paul might just skip the Senate trial altogether alongside other senators that are railing against it. Nothing says bringing the country together like impeaching and convicting a man who no longer has any sort of executive governmental power at all whatsoever. Just the threat that he might run again, that's going to be a real success that they'll be able to tell their Democrat base. And this is going to be a very telling moment for President Biden. Biden talks a good game on unity. Biden could end this entire impeachment trial right now. Instead, he's getting questions. His press secretary is getting questions. Are you going to paint Air Force One a different color? Are you going to repaint Air Force One? Instead of, hey, how are you going to bring the country together by convicting a former president? What if I told you that lockdowns actually make rich people richer? The world's richest 10 people, including Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, are $500 billion richer since the pandemic began. An Oxfam report has investigated growing inequality caused by the pandemic. The wealthiest 1,000 people recouped their losses within 10 months of the virus. The top 10 richest have added billions to their fortune despite the global crisis. I'm reading from the Daily Mail. It continues by saying that Elon Musk, his wealth has grown by $129 billion this year. I think he has enough money to start a social network. Mark Zuckerberg is $45 billion richer. Bernard Arnault from Louis Vuitton, amongst other things he owns, has added $76 billion to his fortune. Bill Gates, $22 billion to his fortune. So the question should be, why is it that the richest people got so much richer this past year? Well, a law of economics that we talk about frequently is that when you have massive government intervention, massive government subsidy, and you have governments getting involved against how markets would naturally work, then you will have people that are basically economic incumbents do a lot better. And so think about who has the advantage when mobility, communication, gathering, and assembly is all disallowed in an economy. Who has the advantage? Well, the people that have massive capital already put aside, people that are able to put hedges against the market, people that are able to invest in mobile delivery, in teleconferencing, every single one of these billionaires, because they already had an incumbent advantage of tens of billions of dollars of wealth, were able to benefit financially from the Chinese coronavirus lockdowns. Now, most Americans did not see their net worth nearly double. I want to reread these amounts again. I mean, these are extraordinary. Bernard Arnault from Louis Vuitton added $676 billion to his fortune. $76 billion. Look, I love free markets. It's the best system out there. This is not sustainable in any way, shape, or form. And this is not because of free markets. It's actually the opposite as to why this happened. We allowed the greatest act of government interference in world history to occur, where we were not allowed to go to work, not allowed to go to church, not allowed to assemble, not allowed to start a business. And so, of course, the pre-existing ruling class, the pre-existing power structure, they're going to benefit financially from whatever advantage they previously had. And so Joe Biden now being president and controlling every sector of government, he's going to have a difficult time reconciling this because these ruling class elites are the very people that put him into office. And so the American people actually are pretty upset about the economic conditions of our country, at least the direction that they're going in. You're going to start to see some things opening up. You're going to see a little bit of a what I call an open up stimulus occurring in the next couple months. But here's a prediction. Around June or July, reality is going to sink in. The open up stimulus will start to flatline. Joe Biden's war on oil and natural gas will start to set in. The stimulus package will probably be passed by then, but it will fizzle out almost instantaneously. And around June or July, we are going to have a market crash. We are going to have an economic crisis because people will start to realize that we have injected trillions of dollars that we do not have a backing for, that we are having mediocre economic growth, and the richest people in our society have become $500 billion richer. For doing what? For basically just existing. And so working class people in our country are going to build up a pattern of resentment against these people. And the danger for that is then you're going to have the true radicals, the Kamala Harris's and the Bernie Sanders types, who will then see this kind of unrest, this wealth inequality and this income inequality, which absolutely does exist, as an excuse and a reason to fundamentally revolutionize the entire economy. And the challenge for now us is going to be just keeping any form of a system we recognize together. You cannot have a billionaire class add another $500 billion of wealth and not expect the plumber who has seen their income go from $44,000 a year to like $36,000 a year and not have some form of economic resentment.
Certainly, Charlie. And these are exactly the people that the left claims to hate, right? Mm-hmm. They hate this wealth and inequality and discrepancies that has systemically existed in this country for so long, but has only been fueled by lockdowns. And in many ways, these lockdowns, intentionally or not, have almost targeted the businesses owned by these billionaires to thrive during COVID-19, whereas their competitors, small businesses, mom and pop shops, grocery stores, are completely being shut down. This is especially true as everything has moved to more of a digital platform. And you see groups like Amazon who have everything conquered in the digital space. You see groups like Apple who are really dominating the tech industry continue to grow and thrive as we're all confined to our homes, whereas any sort of competition in that space is almost instantly wiped out.
It's well said. And so the result of this will be hyperinflation, will be the working class and people that own anything. Your assets will become increasingly devalued. The only things that actually do well in inflation are land. What was Bill Gates just buying a lot of? Oh, he's the number one farm land owner in the country. If you want to know when inflation is coming, just look at when multi-centi billionaires start to buy up land everywhere, which is exactly what is happening. They are buying up hundreds of millions of acres of land all across the country. And in fact, Bill Gates is now the number one farmland owner, as I mentioned, in the entire country. And so what's going to happen then is if you're a true revolutionary like George Soros and you want to get rid of the entire economic system that we currently live under, then this is a pretty good step forward to do that. It would result in currency abolition. It would result in a complete and total restructuring of the way that private property is done in our country. And so a lot of people say, well, Charlie, what is their motivation? I want you to imagine something for a second. I want you to imagine that you are this guy, Bernard Arnault, okay? And he runs Louis Vuitton. He added his $76 billion to his net worth. What does he not yet have that he wants? He has fleets of private jets. He has palatial estates. He has staff for his every need and want. He basically runs the country of France. What does he not yet have? He does not yet have total control over his citizenry. This is nothing new. Every single group of ruling class figures in economics, even from the early 1900s, they want to run everything. And they won't stop till they get it. Bill Gates is the exact same way. I think the only exception to this list is Elon Musk. Elon Musk seems to be someone who actually is not buying assets. He's selling his assets. He says he only wants to rent, and he wants all of his net worth to be just in the stock of his company that he thinks is actually going to change the world. In fact, I did an entire column that kind of went viral last week where I just sent an open memo pleading Elon Musk to start building everything, please. Servers, phones, internet, food, refrigerators, farms, everything. Because Elon has had a track record of using his net worth and his resources not for kind of Machiavellian political power games, instead for the liberation of humans and individuals. He's a huge donor, for example, to Signal, which is a communication-based app that he himself promotes that allows end-to-end encryption. Elon Musk, I really believe, has good intentions. It seems like wealth is just kind of something that happens in the midst of trying to change the world. It doesn't seem like he's opposed to it. I'm sure that he doesn't want to fly Southwest Airlines anytime soon. However, Elon versus these other guys seems to be more and more committed to actually using his wealth to try to advance human progress and not allow tyranny to seep in. 49% of Americans say their top New Year's resolution is to save money in the next year. Well, let's check that box right now. When your family switches to Pure Talk from AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, you could save over $800 a year. That's real money every single month right back in your pocket. And you don't have to sacrifice coverage. Pure Talk is on the same network as one of the big carriers, but they charge you half. That's right, no gimmicks, no fluff added to your bills, which is why Pure Talk is the top-rated wireless company by Consumer Affairs. Right now, get unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigs of data for just $20 a month. And if you go over on data usage, they don't charge you for it. Grab your mobile phone, dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk. When you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. Again, dial #250 and just say Charlie Kirk. It's the secret password. Pure Talk is simply smarter wireless.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show. This is producer Andrew. And yes, I have a last name, Colvette. You can actually follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Say. Would be honored to have a follow. Even though Twitter is a cesspool and it is increasingly censorial. Nevertheless, we're there. Charlie's there. Give him a follow. Charlie Kirk 11. There's essentially two hostile reporters in the press briefings nowadays. Whereas if you recall, the Trump administration had to contend with essentially dozens of hostile members of the press every time they tried to brief the public on the business of the country. But all of that has changed. We've got Fox's Peter Doocy, and EWTN, I think, asked a tough question about abortion, which was completely dodged. And then, you know, actually, I will give one more shout out. A friend of ours, Phil Wegman over at Real Clear Politics, he's doing a great job asking about filibustering and a few other items. So there will be hopefully a few good questions asked of this administration, holding them account as the press is supposed to do. But they've abdicated that job by large part. That's very much true. One of the most pressing issues that they should be asking about, and I believe it's only Peter Doocy who's asked about this, is, of course, the impeachment of former President Donald Trump. And yes, it does pain me to say former, but we have to live in the current reality that we have. And that's real. And this is a new day, maybe a new dark day. But we're going to keep fighting here at the Charlie Kirk Show regardless. So the impeachment documents will be delivered to the Senate if they haven't already been. And what you're seeing is the emergence of the fissures within the conservative party. So while we have the Romney wing, as we could call it, that is obviously, if you guys remember back, I'm old enough to remember the first time Donald Trump was impeached and then headed to the Senate for a trial in which he was acquitted. There was one break in the conservatives, of course, and that was Mitt Romney from the state of Utah, sort of. Or is it Massachusetts? I can't remember. Of course, I can remember he was the governor of Massachusetts and then ran for Senate and was elected, partly because the president backed him in the state of Utah. Utah deserves much better, unfortunately. We have clip 16. Let's hear from Senator Mitt Romney talking about this impeachment. And he says, if this is not an impeachable offense, what is?
Do you think it was appropriate that he was impeached by the House?
Well, yes, I believe that what is being alleged and what we saw, which is incitement to insurrection, is an impeachable offense. If not, what is?
Yeah. So, I mean, let me just apologize for playing that clip. It's tough to hear him describe the impeachment of a. You know, the saddest part for Mitt is probably Senator Romney. The saddest part for him is probably that he's not president, never will be, never was. You know, it's just really rich. The guy is such a pandering politician that he, I think he will probably get primaried and he will be heavily primaried and heavily opposed. Nevertheless, he is the perfect example of what's going on in the Republican Party, this fissure. And we might see a couple other breaks. Senator Murkowski from Alaska, Senator Collins from Maine, Ben Sass. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But then we have the other voices in the Republican Party, like Senator Marco Rubio, who was on with Chris Wallace on Fox News on Sunday. He was calling the impeachment trial stupid. Let's play clip 18.
I think the trial is stupid. I think it's counterproductive. We already have a flaming fire in this country, and it's like taking a bunch of gasoline and pouring it on top of the fire.
Do you believe Donald Trump committed an impeachable offense?
To begin with, I think it's a moot point. Because I think right now Donald Trump is no longer the president. He is a former president.
And that last piece of sound was actually from Senator Mike Rounds calling it a moot point. I completely agree. It is a moot point and it is divisive. It's one thing to say that the president spoke in an unwise manner at a speech at the rally on January 6th. It's a completely other thing to say that he incited a riot. So, first of all, I disagree with the premise that the president incited a riot. I believe that politicians should be held accountable for their actions, and I believe individuals should be held accountable for their actions. And what we had on January 6th was a bunch of individuals who took it upon themselves to stage a riot that is increasingly clear was very pre-planned and premeditated. There was agitators on both the left and the right, mostly on the right, admittedly. But there increasingly is very clear that there were people on the left that were a part of the January 6th riot at the Capitol. But, you know, Bernie Sanders was not impeached when one of his supporters shot and almost killed Steve Scalise at a congressional baseball practice. Why? Because it would have been inappropriate to hold Senator Bernie Sanders accountable for something one of his supporters did. Now, you could claim that the senator incited that violence because of his messaging, because of his rhetoric, but that's not what we do. Every individual is held accountable for their own actions. And on that day, and we've played it back on this show and on the podcast many times and on the live streams, President Trump called for them to peacefully and patriotically protest. Nevertheless, they are going to move forward with this impeachment. And the truth is, it's probably unconstitutional. The Constitution is very clear that impeachment is for sitting members that are holding office. Now, there is a few examples dating back to like the 1870s where somebody was impeached after leaving office. They actually resigned as to avoid impeachment and that he was impeached anyways. But this is not that. This president stepped aside peacefully, wished his successors good luck and much success. And democracy, our constitutional republic, marches on nevertheless. But what you have is this debate about whether it can happen. Now, the truth about the political process in America today is that the Democrats are going to move forward with it because why? Because they have the power to do so. But there are some questions emerging about whether or not the Chief Justice, John Roberts, will even attend the impeachment trial because it is unconstitutional. And why is that happening, namely the impeachment? Well, it's happening because we didn't win in Georgia in the Senate runoffs, and we have a 50-50 split, and Vice President Kamala Harris is now the deciding tie-breaking vote. And the Democrats run all the levers of government in our current moment, and they're going to move forward with or without the Constitution. We've seen this time and time again from them. That the Constitution is an impediment to getting what they want many times, more often than not, as a matter of fact. But one of the interesting dynamics that's going to come out of this is whether or not Chief Justice Roberts will actually preside over a Senate trial that is unconstitutional. Again, the Constitution is very, very clear, in my opinion. Now, there are people that disagree on this, of course, but the Constitution is very clear that an impeachment is supposed to be for those who currently hold an office. Obviously, President Donald Trump is not in office anymore. So the question is, can you do it retroactively? Can you do it after he's already left office? Now, most on the right would say no, but those on the left right now, because they hold the power, are going to move forward with the impeachment regardless of what the Constitution says. As Senator Rand Paul says, this is a fake partisan impeachment. And of course it is. They know that they're not going to get a supermajority, which is what is required to remove a president from office. Now, again, he's already out of office, so the point is moot. But you are not going to get 67 votes. It's just not going to happen. So why are they doing this? Why are they doing this when they know it's one of the most divisive things that could come from the Congress, especially during a new administration where they're supposed to be moving forward with a new agenda, where they're supposed to be focused on the work of the American people, especially when they say that what they want is unity? They are going to move forward with an impeachment of a former president of the United States when he still has an approval rating, according to Rasmussen, of about 48%. And people disagree with that, but it's in the 40s, where you're telling 75 million Americans that voted for him, nearly 75 million, that you guys have believed disinformation, that you're part of a cult of personality, that we require a surveillance state to monitor your behavior and your actions. And by the way, we're going to impeach a former president just because we can. Let's play Mark Levin talking about this sham unity message from President Joe Biden. And I love Mark Levin because he calls out the hypocrisy so well here. Play tape.
Joe Biden made much of the word unity. Nothing that Joe Biden has done since his inauguration speech demonstrates any form of unity. It's conformity.
That's exactly right. Unity to the left and to President Joe Biden right now, by the proof that it are his actions, not his words. Look at what he does. Talk is cheap. This is conformity. It's the absence of dissent. It's silencing opposition. It's propagandizing one side against the other. And what does the administration have to say? Congress is going to do what Congress does, says Ashley Etienne, Vice President Kamala Harris' communication director. Congress is going to do what Congress does. President Joe Biden, you are the leader of your party. You set the pace. You set the tone. If you called out in the way that a leader is supposed to, if you called out Senator Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and said, stop this. It's dividing the country. It's time to heal. They would stand down. But you are not doing that, are you? You're letting them move forward with a sham impeachment that is further dividing a country that's already obviously divided. Now, what their goal would be is to get a supermajority, convict him, and then a simple majority to ban him from ever holding office again. I want to go right here to some sound from Senator Rand Paul over the weekend. Of all the sound to come out of the weekend, this is my favorite. And I was waiting to get to this, but obviously we had to cover the impeachment because it's an impeachment of President Trump, even though he's not in office. Nevertheless, it's, as Senator Marco Rubio said, it's stupid. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get a supermajority. But it kind of goes back to a deeper question about election integrity and about the role the media has played in this whole, you know, those last 4 years, really, how they make everything feel like a war zone, how they've inserted themselves, as Senator Rand Paul will say in just a second, into the story instead of being objective. The malfeasance of our media establishment, the legacy media, is really heinous. And it deserves to be called out again, again, and again. And they rightly deserve a lower approval rating than Congress, which, if you know anything about the history of approval ratings for Congress, takes some doing. And it's something like 17% of conservatives have trust in the mainstream news media. So let's play this clip of Rand Paul on ABC with George Stephanopoulos, who, as many of you know, came out of the Clinton administration and then became a journalist. I'm using air quotes here in the studio. Let's talk. And they're talking about election integrity. So let's play this tape and we'll talk about it after.
Paul, let me begin with a threshold question for you. This election was not stolen. Do you accept that fact?
Well, what I would say is that the debate over whether or not there was fraud should occur. We never had any presentation in court where we actually looked at the evidence. Most of the cases were thrown out for lack of standing, which is a procedural way of not actually hearing the question. Courts traditionally and historically don't like to hear election questions. But yes, were there people who voted twice? Were there dead people who voted? Were there illegal aliens who voted? Yes, and we should get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and I love that Rand Paul here is standing up for the issue of election integrity. And then later in this clip, and I'm not sure we have it actually, there is a dust up between the two of these men where he says, you have inserted yourself into the story. You've forgotten who you are, Rand Paul, or George Stephanopoulos. You are supposed to be a journalist. You're supposed to ask questions of both sides. And what you're doing is you're stating a premise that's false. You're saying, well, obviously it's debunked and it's completely false. And the president's guilty of insurrection for feeding a lie to millions of his followers. Well, as Senator Rand Paul said, you know what? There is issues about election integrity that we've yet to deal with as a country because, in my personal opinion, the courts basically looked at the issue and said it's too big. We're not going to overturn this thing. We're not even going to hear the case. Now we heard later when Texas sued the state of Pennsylvania, and then multiple other states joined on, and I believe 17 or 18 joined an amicus brief. And the Supreme Court is supposed to hear cases between states. Now we heard later that Justice Alito and Justice Thomas were willing to take the case, and the rest were not. So we never adjudicated the issue of election integrity and the questions of whether or not state legislatures had their rights overridden by governors, secretaries of state, and state Supreme Courts. And he's right to call out George Stephanopoulos and to not take the bait and to not agree to the premise of the question. Now, conservatives out there listening, and you're having these discussions with your friends or the dinner table, obviously, do it politely. Do it winsomely when you can. Be persuasive. Be more educated. Do not accept the premise that the left is constantly shoving down our throats. And you'll see this when you read their news articles or you see them on the news. They'll say, well, this is totally debunked and It's a lie. It's disinformation. It's probably from Russia. Well, no. Senator Rand Paul's 100% accurate here. This isn't misinformation. We never got a chance to really discuss it. Why? Because the courts abdicated their responsibility. They said it's too big. Now, Senator Rand Paul did not vote to overturn the electors on January 6th because he said that the issue was designed to be at the state level. And I somewhat agree with that. I somewhat disagree. Nevertheless, I respect the decision. I respect the logic. But the media narrative has driven so much of our current moment. It's the media saying, like George Stephanopoulos did there, that this is debunked. It never happened. It was a lie. That is giving those on the left that want to see revenge upon this president, even though he's no longer in office, it's giving them the authority, at least the veneer of authority, to attack him. Doesn't make it fair, right, or accurate. But they've said it so many times that if you repeat a lie enough, it becomes the truth to many people. This is a tactic as old as fascism itself. And they just keep repeating it. This is debunked. It never happened. Now, do we know if there was enough fraud to overturn the election? Peter Navarro came out with a report today that says yes. But we don't know. And Rand Paul said that in that interview. To be fair, we don't know. But there was a ton of issues that were exposed in this election. So before you take the bait and you say that President Trump incited a riot and at the Capitol an insurrection because he was fighting for election integrity and didn't believe the results, take a step back and reject the premise. And this issue about the media's role is a very powerful issue because it doesn't just, of course, apply to what we see happening in this unconstitutional impeachment. It also applies to what's happening in regards to the coronavirus and the lockdowns, or increasingly the lack thereof. So we're hearing news today that in California, the lockdowns, this as of this morning, the stay-at-home order, at least, is going to be removed. Governor Newsom, who is under threat of recall, and if you haven't, if you're listening to this in the state of California and you have not sent in your recall Governor Gavin Newsom petition, please do so. I think it's at 1.2 million signatures. They need 1.5 by the middle of March. It's going to happen. He's now feeling the pressure, and I think this is a direct result of that recall petition, by the way, that he's feeling this much pressure. But he's part of a growing number of U.S. cities and states that have announced plans to lift restrictions on indoor dining, and in California's case, probably outdoor dining, bars and restaurants, and moves that come less than a week after a change at the White House. Joe Biden is president. We can remove the lockdowns. That's very, very convenient. We've seen this in Michigan with Gretchen Whitmer, Baltimore, Chicago, Washington, D.C. with Muriel Bowser, who wants to be a governor, apparently, of the state of Washington, D.C., something we need to fight tooth and nail. The Democrats are going to try and push that in Puerto Rico through. Other recent January examples include Philadelphia, Minnesota, Denver County, Colorado, New York, Orange Zones, which is Erie County. And then there's this idea that the Biden administration has said and told us repeatedly that they have a plan. He ran on the fact that Trump was messing things up on the coronavirus, that he was doing a terrible job and that he has a plan. And then we find out, oh, actually, he doesn't have a plan. And there's nothing he can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic over the next several months. Let's play cut three. This is Joe Biden in his own words, admitting what we already knew.
If we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months as this pandemic rages on, because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
Whoops. Whoops. That's not what he told voters when he was running for president. Let's play clip four of what he purportedly believed, I guess, before stepping in the White House.
We're in a situation now where The New England Medical Journal, one of the serious, most serious journals in the whole world, said for the first time ever that this, the way this president has responded to this crisis has been absolutely tragic. And so, folks, I will take care of this. I will end this. I will make sure we have a plan.
He will make sure we have a plan. Well, I guess he got sidetracked or forgot, which is very possible. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate, and rumors of his cognitive decline are myriad. We don't have to go into that in too much detail. I think you all know what I mean. But this is what's really irking me now, is that you've got Deborah Birx, Dr. Birx, going on the Sunday shows now, trying to reclaim her reputation. Let's play cut one of her throwing her former administration under the proverbial bus.
I'm convinced there were parallel data streams because I...
Disinformation.
I saw the president presenting graphs that I never made. So I know that someone or someone out there or someone inside was creating a parallel set of data and graphics that were shown to the president.
Folks, what this is simple reputational management. I don't deny that she had disagreements with the former administration. But this is going against the fact that there are other valid opinions, namely Dr. Scott Atlas from Stanford, who came in to help the administration deal with the pandemic. Dr. Atlas was for less lockdown, saying we should not be quarantining the healthy. We quarantine the sick. Never before in history have we quarantined the healthy. There are other competing ideas out there besides the fact that you need to wear two or three masks at a time and you need to lock down the economy and the entire country to save people. Gretchen Whitmer, who is another governor who should be recalled, announcing that she's going to be opening up her state too to indoor dining.
Today, the Department of Health and Human Services is issuing an epidemic order to resume indoor dining on Monday, February 1st. I know this pandemic has hurt our restaurant owners, our restaurant workers. I want you to know that I will continue to do everything in my power to support you and your families.
Lordy, lordy. Okay. Again, I'm broadcasting from KRLA in Los Angeles, Glendale, California today. And Governor Newsom has just lifted the statewide lockdown order. So now it'll go back to a color-coded system. Some counties, depending on ICU capacity rates, will be open for indoor and outdoor dining or, you know, some self-care services. It's just really, really convenient. And it's really sad, frankly, that we called this before the election. We said on November 4th, if Joe Biden wins, we all have a feeling that all these lockdowns are going to go away. Now, we were somewhat wrong, to be fair. It didn't happen until he was actually in office. So he takes it off. He takes the oath, gets inaugurated. And now all these blue cities around the country are finally taking their foot off the necks of small business owners somewhat. That after 100, some reports say 150,000 small businesses have been closed and will never open again. Folks, we have lived through one of the most obscene scams in the nation's history. And now we have folks like Dr. Deborah Birx going on national television to revive their reputation, believing that it's been unduly tainted by their association with the Trump administration. But I want to play some tape from earlier on during the pandemic when Dr. Deborah Birx was on television and during the press briefings. It was the daily coronavirus task force press briefings where she says that they've taken a very liberal approach. Let's go ahead and play clip two.
So I think in this country, we've taken a very liberal approach to mortality. There are other countries that if you had a pre-existing condition, and let's say the virus caused you to go to the ICU and then have a heart or kidney problem, some countries are recording that
as a heart issue or a kidney issue and not a COVID-19 death. If someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that as a COVID-19 death.
Now, when somebody says that we're taking a very liberal approach to mortality in this country, and then you come on after the fact, after that president is out of office, and you said they had parallel sets of data. Well, I wonder why, Dr. Birx, I wonder why folks within the Trump administration would push back at your liberal set of data that's counting everybody that dies with or of COVID as a COVID death. And meanwhile, you've got CNN publishing every day, wouldn't take the ticker off, and we call it pandemic porn. They wouldn't take the ticker off the side of the screen during the Trump administration of how many people had contracted COVID-19 and how many people had died from COVID-19, given your liberal approach to mortality. So here you come out after the fact and pushed back and said there was parallel sets of data. Well, of course there is, because as we've said on this show and on the podcast, it's not about you being the party of science or you listen to the science. It's which science you want to listen to and which scientists you believe. And we should have a debate about COVID. We should have a debate about how we calculate mortality rates. An issue this big where we shut down the world's economic engine over something that is contested and that there is dissent over. I think it's disgusting that after the fact we platform these people to throw the Trump administration under the bus. But of course, we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised about it when 95% of our legacy media in this country is hell-bent on castigating all Trump supporters as insurrectionists, as in need of surveillance from the state.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I encourage you to get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.